Hi, welcome to the On Your Marks Book Review Podcast with me, Jonathan Marks. This week I review the book The Heart Aroused, Poetry and the Preservation of the Soul in Corporate America, written by David White and published in 1994. In this podcast and the companion infographic, I will share strategies for inviting the soul into the workplace and how creativity, complexity and knowledge, as well as innocence, have an important role to play in sustaining our careers and possibly all corporate life. This book is a substitution for one I'd originally identified to read. The substituted book, entitled Work, A History of How We Spend Our Time by James Sussman, proved to be disappointing, and not having the luxury of forcing myself through a book just for the sake of it, I dumped that overboard and reached for an alternate from my bookshelf. I wanted to remain true to the idea of work and what this means to us all, and was grateful to stumble across this week's book, which I last read during my MBA around 20 years ago. I originally read the book as my master's research was focused on storytelling in the corporate setting, and David White was just making a well-deserved name for himself as a corporate poet and storyteller. Judging by the margin notes from my first read, the book was more than just a source, but caused me to question much of what I was hearing in the business school classroom. Now, 20 years later, after a second read of the book, I find that the issues White raises are in many ways more relevant and urgent than when first he presented his ideas. Coincidentally, or not, if like me you don't believe in coincidence, this book follows my review of the Netflix book No Rules Rules to Absolute Perfection. What seems to be a manifesto from Reed Hastings for how to build a highly productive yet soulful culture seems to find strong intellectual and mythological underpinning from what is suggested in White's book. I found The Heart Aroused like an oasis after far too long in the desert. It reminded me of why I was drawn to narrative and story for my research topic, although truth be told, I did atrociously in my research, and as I scan through my dissertation now with no small measure of embarrassment, it reads like it was written by a chimpanzee with a box of crayons. Anyway, let's assume I've learnt a little since then, and that my current research work is a little bit more like a chimp with a sharpened pencil. All right, back to the book. White is now a very well-established consultant, speaker, writer, and guide for this idea of inculcating more soulful engagement into the workplace. He is British by birth, a biologist by training, and a poet by profession. If being a poet is a profession, some suggest it may be a human affliction. The book presents something of a journey into, through, and out of corporate life, through the masterful observation of the character of corporate America. White offers his observations alongside story and poetry that help explain the nature of the human condition in the work or office setting. What he uncovers, as so many others from the mythopoetic movement in the US and Europe have found, see for example James Hillman, Robert Bly, Joseph Campbell, and many others, is that much of what we experience is both mystifying and often profoundly painful to endure in the modern workplace, and that we can understand this through myth, legend, and poetry. And not just understand, these poems and stories are a kind of salve that heals us as it explains our world. It was virtually impossible for me to read this book, even a second time, as an external intellectual exercise. I was drawn into the narrative, and the new set of margin notes is filled with my observations of where I find myself now, in, as James Hollis calls, the middle passage. White's chapter on the soul at midlife provoked much in me, and maybe this is the truest test of a good book, when at the instant of reading it, it becomes a mirror for one's life, rather than a manual to improve productivity or profitability or social media popularity. White quotes Kafka in the book, who says this far better than I could. A good book should be an axe for the frozen sea within us. White begins the book by quoting Dante from the Divine Comedy as his process of inviting the soul into work. And I quote, "In the middle of the road of my life, I awoke in a dark wood where the true way was wholly lost," end quote. Suggesting that for many people, they do awake to find that their creative life is missing from the workday, and that so much work is often a struggle, but behind, beneath, and beyond the struggle, we find meaning. And poets, according to White, are guides across this internal and external landscape to help us find that meaning. We all know the start to so many great children's stories of once upon a time. But the traditional way of starting a story, at least one that is meaningful, is once beneath a time. And it is into this darkness of contemplative self-doubt and inquiry, something White correctly says is not taught at Harvard Business School, that he invites us into through the book. And it is this descent that forms the backdrop to White's first poem, that of Beowulf, exploring the nature of power and vulnerability in the workplace. Very simply parsed, the story of Beowulf, which dates back more than 1,000 years, tells the tale of the king of Denmark, whose people are being terrorized and killed by a demonic monster called Grendel, who lives at the bottom of a lake. To the king's aid comes Beowulf, a young warrior, who mortally wounds the monster. However, a far greater threat lies in wait, Grendel's mother. It is here that White pauses the story, reminding us that so often the thing we fear is not the thing at all. It is what gave birth to that nightmare. In the story, this is Grendel's mother. In our lives, who knows? Certainly in the work context, most of us have solved a difficult problem only to discover belatedly that this was caused by something far greater that we simply never knew or took notice of. These need not be the domain of major catastrophes such as Chernobyl or Exxon Valdez, but may just be the slow process of ignoring customers or employees or public sentiment and then finding a Grendel's mother-sized problem to deal with much later. Eventually, Beowulf must enter the lake and do mortal combat with Grendel's mother. He emerges victorious, but a changed person, having found himself in the truest sense of the word. He returns to the surface of the lake, and instantly the sword he has used melts away, reminding us of our inner mastery, because that is the real journey to slay Grendel's mother, and that this yields a mastery that may not be useful or valued in the world above. This leads White to consider our creativity, the fire in us that not only warms us but is the spark of our imagination, the idea of heat or hot being a word that denotes for us all that is compelling, alluring, and exciting. Hot ideas, on fire, heat of the moment. So much of corporate life, as consultant Peter Block says, rests on the principle of sacrifice now for future unstated promise. John Sculley, former CEO of Apple, was quoted as saying, "The new corporate contract is that we'll offer you an opportunity to express yourself and grow if you promise to leash yourself to our dream, at least for a while." Many of us do this, and then, as one poet who White quote says, 10 years ago, I turned my face for a moment, and it became my life." End quote. Where most find themselves is far from the fire, rather in frozen existence, fulfilling all that our work role requires, but without bringing the fire into our work. White quotes one of his own poems to caution us against the state. The last few lines, which read, "Always this energy smoulders inside. When it remains unlit, the body fills with dense smoke." Our refusal to light the fire means we live in this dense, hazy smokiness. The longer we neglect the fire, the more we are overcome by smoke. He shares a wonderful ancient Chinese story that so vividly explains the role of fire in the creative process. An old master potter was attempting to develop a new glaze for his porcelain vases. It became the single focus of his work. Every day he tended the fire in his kilns, controlling the temperature carefully and experimenting with the chemistry of the glazes he applied. But still he could not achieve the beauty he desired. Finally, having tried everything, he decided his life was meaningless and over, and one day he walked into the molten heat of a fully fired kiln to die. The next day, when his assistants opened the kiln, they found the glaze on the vases the most exquisite they had ever seen. The master had disappeared into the fire and into his creation. Thus the fire becomes the place we are baked to perfection. We become the essential ingredient in our own creative process. White presents several other themes in the book. The last which I want to share is that regarding knowledge and innocence. He does this with the ancient Irish story of Fionn, or Finn in the modern pronunciation. The story describes how youthfulness and innocence meet experience and knowledge. I think this is a profoundly important narrative for our time. We have many instances of youthful success and the pressure on young people to achieve what iconic founders such as Mark Zuckerberg have achieved is immense. But what myth and legend would tell us is that knowledge and wisdom are achieved over many years of hard work and contemplation, or at least through first-hand experience. In this story, Fionn, a young man, is on the run from the sworn enemies of his now-dead father. He is raised for a time by his aunts and is still to find his destiny. He joins the court of a local lord who sees his great gifts and abilities as a hunter. This is why it is where the trouble begins. He simply is not ready yet to meet his destiny, even though the lord or the mentor or manager in the modern corporate setting know that the young protege has great talent. In time, Fionn is wandering through the forest one day and comes across a man cooking salmon over a fire. Salmon in the mythical world represents knowledge. The man asks Fionn to watch the fire and the fish while he gathers more wood, instructing him to turn the fish very carefully over the coals so it never burns. Of course, with the carelessness of youth, a small piece of the skin burns, and as Fionn touches the burned spot, a few drops of salmon oil spill out and burn his finger. So it is with knowledge. Sometimes we are just not ready for what we have learnt or think we know. In this case, the act pays off, as Fionn becomes imbued with wisdom from the fish and goes on to be the greatest poet in Irish history. The story tells of the wholeness of knowledge and innocence. So often we only allow this curious creativity and innocence to emerge outside of work. The story of Fionn, says White, tells us that we should seek to bring these worlds together and blend together our marvellous, distracted and entangled presence in the terrible beauty of the world. White's book suggests that in the end, and I quote, our work is to bring all the parts that do not belong to our corporate life. The very part of us that doesn't have the least interest in the organization is our greatest offering to it. It is the part that opens the windows of the imagination and allows fresh air into the meeting room. End quote. The book offers a view of how we can move from a monochromatic view of the corporate world into one that allows the rich flow of creativity, innovation, and almost musical complexity into our work. The book, despite the almost 25 years since it was written, is an important text for those of us immersed in the corporate world. Even though the focus is on the soul of corporate America, I believe it to be relevant everywhere. As we see that the most successful US export is its culture, good, bad, and toxic, we may find that the boardrooms of Bangladesh are not much different from those of Boston. The book is a reminder that so much of what we seek is already known to us, and that poets, among others, are important and useful guides into and through the external and internal world. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you have a wonderful week ahead. And as always, I look forward to your feedback.